All right, so you are back with another, Steambox podcast today from Highlander. I am super excited to be here with my Highlander Steampunks. Highlander Steampunks, please say what's up.
What's up?
Hey,
and
hey.
Our guest is Vida Ayala. Vida Ayala, non-binary, Afro-Rican, superstar writer of Marvel and DC Comics. Hey, Vida, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all today?
I'm amazing. I'm happy now that we're connected. Hey, so I wanna ask right off the bat. I know the students have questions. I wanna ask, what's that moment like for you to get X-Men? Is this your biggest go so far? I thought James Bond was a big go for you, but now X-Men?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was working on like a miniseries last year, and then they offered me to be able to pitch on like an ongoing series, and I was like, this seems fake. This doesn't seem real. This is fake news. But they liked my pitch, and it's pretty wild. They let me make up a bunch of new like characters and stuff, so I'm super stoked.
I'm super stoked that Vida is a friend of Steambox. I have a picture somewhere of you rocking the Steambox t-shirt, right? Super excited to have you representing Steambox. But that's not where my love for you begins or ends. I think it's about representation in comic books, right? I think we talked about this before when you wrote Wonder Woman. There was the lens of a young Black girl in Wonder Woman, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
A Afro-Latinx non-binary person.
Yo, was that a young Vida? Did you put like young Vida in Wonder Woman?
I sure did. I was actually asked to, funny enough, like not me, like as, you know, this person has a different name, but I was asked by my co-writer, Steve Orlando, to help him craft a story about what I personally would have needed from that situation. You know what I mean? Like, or I'm sorry, not Steve Orlando. I Wonder Woman when I wrote by myself. I'm really tired, guys. I haven't had any caffeine.
Yo, this is really, early. Really, this is the AM podcast, right? Like we're hitting you up at 9:30 in the morning.
Y'all don't understand. You know, I stay up very late. I do not get up very early. Anyway, sorry. Yes, no. The Wonder Woman story. There was a young woman. This was the one with the cheetah, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
That character was who I always wanted to be as a kid. Just like. Super and like industrious and like precocious and like I'm gonna climb to the middle of the jungle and go face down this like scary like you know animal god in order to get what I want. I'm not that cool though, definitely not that cool. But I wanted to show kind of even in characters that are one-off characters, it's really important to give a broader range of who can have adventures or who can face down scary stuff. I'm trying very hard not to curse.
I don't think it wouldn't be unprecedented for our podcast, right?
It really
wouldn't be. Yo, so hold up. You also did this in James Bond, right? So you're writing James Bond now. We're on issue 3.
Yeah. Man, that cover is super dope. I get distracted by it every time.
But it feels to me that this James Bond story is not written through the perspective of James Bond alone, right? There's another person of color. There's another woman of color. Representing there with James Bond. I don't want to assume this person's gender.
No.
Another dope character there.
I'm co-writing this book with my best friend in the whole wide world, Danny Lohr. And one of the things that we kind of both agree on is that what makes Bond especially cool is how cool he is around other people. And I think that the best way to showcase how awesome he is to kind of play him off of someone who is equally as competent and equally as dope. And so we were given the opportunity to kind of make like a, basically our directive was like, all right, make a partner for Bond. And we were like, what if a Bond girl actually got to be like, cool. Like what if a Bond girl didn't just die or like could like move on and do other cool stuff. And you know, we rewatched a lot of the movies and I'm a super big fan of
sexual object. Like so far she hasn't been just there as a sexual object, which is probably the norm for a Bond girl.
Right, exactly. And that's no disrespect to all the amazing Bond girls that have come before, right? Because I love, like, Michelle Yeoh was a Bond girl, and she was super awesome, and Halle Berry, yeah. And, like, when they changed Money Penny into Naomi Harris, I was like, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to us. But I was like, okay, but what if they could also go in the field? Like, what if we just let that happen? And, you know, my brand is queer and brown. So I was like, well, I don't know if I'll be able to make her queer, but I can certainly make her brown. Like,
yeah.
And Danny, of course, I don't know if you've read any of Danny's stuff, but that is also their brand.
That's dope. I have... It's not fair. I'm being unfair right now. I have a million follow-up questions, right? Like talking about the person who's in that Gambit-esque role and so forth. But I want to turn it over to the students because I know some of the students have questions. Since we are not using the microphone, if you are in the back, please nice and loud.
Stand up.
Yeah, who's got a question? I know you all have questions, but who has the bravery and courage to ask their question? Go over.
I believe in
Hello.
You.
Hello.
Hello. I'm great. How are you?
Good. How would you inspire somebody to, if they're an artist, to choose the right career path?
I come from a tradition of tough love and kind of not brutal honesty. I don't believe in being cruel, but in straight up honesty. And so if I was talking to someone who was looking at what they wanted to do, I think the first thing that we would have to talk about is what brings you joy and what do you think you could do when you start to hate it? I think those are, because I've been writing since I learned how to read. I learned how to read late. I was about 10 or 11 and I could not stop writing. But there are some days where I'm like, I don't want to see another word ever again. Like, I don't want to do it. But the core of me is someone who enjoys it and who loves it like I love air. And so it is something I can push through that pain. And so, you know, depending on where someone is in the decision process, are you talking about going to art school? Are you talking about, you know, what people you should pitch to, how you should do your portfolio? The situation would be a little different. But I think the center of it is, what do you really love to do? And can you see yourself doing it even when you don't want to do anything? And then, you know, my hope is that the answer is that you do have something that you love that much, because art is really powerful. And I think that if you are that passionate about it, then other people are going to respond to it and other people will find inspiration in you. So if you want to talk about portfolios, I can talk about portfolios. If you want to talk about art school versus not art school, we can talk about that specific stuff. But in general, that's where I start.
Okay. Another question?
I need a notebook. Can you stop writing things down?
He's going to get a notebook.
Is there a specific person like in your life that inspired your ideas?
My parents are both avid readers. My mom was a school teacher and then also a social worker for 30 years. And we didn't really have a ton of money when I was growing up. Sometimes we went a little hungry, but there was always... She would always go without, and I know this now, I didn't know this at the time, if I wanted something to read. She was always like, no, this is important. Feeding your mind is important. And my dad, I hated school and I hated homework. I hated it with like a burning passion. It was the worst thing in the world to me. But my dad taught me these tricks about how to get through it. And a lot of it was, he was like, we're going to view doing these assignments like a detective is breaking a case. And so we would go in and kind of recontextualize how we were doing the work. And I still hated the work, but what I found was, oh, later on when I start doing things that I like, if I look at it as like a problem or a puzzle, then, you know, it makes much more sense to me. And so the two of them really helped me. They kind of inspired me to do things in a more textual way, if that makes sense. But also, like, you know, I have a bunch of siblings and they're all visual artists and I was really jealous because I can't draw. And so they were also my inspiration. I was like, I gotta get good at something because this isn't fair. So,
this is really important. This is probably, the most comic book question I have. Yo, what's up with Sasha Banks? Right? Like, what is going
on? Love of my life.
Oh, Sasha Banks is the love of my life, right? But like, so if you don't know who Sasha Banks is, Sasha Banks is a five-time WWE champion. And in my opinion, and I wonder where you are with this, but in this generation of wrestling, Sasha Banks versus Bayley at like some NXT TakeOver show.
2015 was like the Brooklyn TakeOver.
Brooklyn,
the greatest match of our generation.
I mean, seriously, right? But now Sasha Banks can't even get on TV. What the hell is going on?
That's a lot of politics behind the scenes. I will say, though, that when she is on TV, I enjoy wrestling the way I enjoy comic books, which is at all times, please feed it to me. I will just continue to take it. If you like long form storytelling and muscly people beating the crap out of bad guys, then, you know, you're going to like wrestling. But if I had my way, she would be on TV nightly. I just don't. I'm not in control of the WWE, unfortunately. They would be, they would be so blessed to have me.
I know there's not room for all of the talent to have their moment all of the time. Like, I get that, right? And push some of the other people and all that stuff. But, like, Asuka deserves that spot, right? Like, Asuka deserves.
This podcast is about the kids, so we're not going to get into it. But if you want to do a whole wrestling podcast about how they disrespect brown people, especially brown women, then I could do that. Like, I could just do that.
I'm saying. All right. So I'm going to let you off the hook with it. Give me your top three, though. Give me your top three before we shift gears back to comics. Who you loving?
Wrestlers or matches?
Yeah. Wrestlers.
My number one used to be Stone Cold, but I heard that he beat his wife, and so I can't get down with that. Sorry, man. Sasha Banks, Charlotte Flair, and Asuka are my top three right now. I love Naomi, and she just came back, and the glow is back, so probably some of that will shift. But, I think the women's wrestlers are, like, they're driving the division right now. This is so boring for people who don't care about wrestling, so I'm going to stop talking about it. But
them do, right? Like, I got some wrestling heads here, right? But the thing is, back before that takeover match, the women were there for bra and panties matches and stuff like that.
I remember. And that was kind of- well, no, let's go back to China real quick, all right? Ninth wonder of the world. This woman was like 6 foot tall, 250 pounds of pure muscle, and there was no one. I mean, please, bra and panty match also, but like she was choke slamming dudes with the best of them. So
yeah,
like,
no doubt.
Know, ladies have been there. Like, ladies, they've been keeping it down. But even before, you know, after that, they fought so hard behind the scenes to be able to be seen with the same respect as the male wrestlers. And there are many male wrestlers that I respect and that I love. But like, the amount of struggle that these women have gone through without thanks, and people take it for granted, is you know, finally they're getting their moment, and it should continue forever. Because
that's why I think it's important. But then they keep going back to, like, all the blonde people get the titles all the time. And I don't know. It makes me feel weird. I'm sorry. I know you guys have questions on your cue cards.
Let's get some questions.
Do it.
You in the front.
Hold on. You way over there. I don't know if you on video. Here we go.
So the new type of characters that you're creating bring much hate to you and writers that are going through this. So how do you deal with it so easily?
It's not easy. The real answer, I mean, I'm quick with a joke. I always am. Where I grew up, you had to be fast, funny, or very attractive to survive. And I am not very fast, and I am minimally attractive, so I had to be very funny. But, you know, the truth of it is, it's really scary sometimes and really painful other times. I tend to, you know, if I'm getting that is without reason, I will block them. I don't, you know what I mean, or I will ignore them. If it's something, like if it's a critique that has merit to it, if I have created a character or written a scene that is harmful, then I listen and I try to do better. But honestly, a lot of it comes from people being upset at change. And that has always, doesn't matter whether you're writing or making new laws or trying to create a division in wrestling. Change is really hard for people to accept.
Can you give us an example or two?
I got, I went private on my Instagram recently because they announced my X-Men book, and there's a bunch of kids that look like the kids in your class, pretty much. Just a bunch of different kids, not all looking the same. And someone commented on a picture of my mom about basically what a piece of crap I was, and I should just, you know, make my own characters, and just went off on a picture of my mother. And I was like, you know what? This is not like.
They called you an affront to Stan Lee, right? Like you were disrespecting Stan Lee.
Yes, definitely got that. I've gotten a couple, people DM me all the time with pretty nasty stuff. I'm very lucky in that I run blockchain all the time. I'm just like, I don't need any of that nonsense. So a lot of the people that are bold enough to like send death threats, I've weeded them out. I've gotten some, but not many. But I know multiple people who literally even just doing their own thing, their own book, living their own life, creating their own characters, have gotten death threats, have gotten incredibly racist things thrown at them, have gotten threats of sexual violence, like all kinds of stuff. So like, it isn't easy, but it's worth it. And I don't think you have to suffer for things to be worth it, but I think that this is worth the suffering that I go through.
You know who I have in, one of my students just graduated, you met her, Malate is, Malate is Riri. Malate is Riri, right? Like Malate could totally do MIT, is young Black, ridiculously smart. And as comic nerds, Malate and I talked all the time about these comic books, right? So representation is super important. We love Riri. If you don't know, Iron Man had mysteriously died or disappeared in one of the books recently, and a young Black girl took the mantle. She had her own Iron Man outfit, and the book for a moment was called Iron Man.
Very briefly.
I was so happy with that, and I was so proud of that, especially as a Marvel fan and as an educator. But then I quickly became upset when they changed Riri. So think about this. You get the description, right? Young Black girl, she's got an afro sometimes. She's out there with her Iron Man suit. But then they started drawing hearts on her, right? Like, and she's from like Chicago. She's super tough. And they started drawing hearts on her, and they call her Ironheart now. Like, so that now her name in the book is Ironheart. Like this, she went and took over Dr. Doom's Latveria, and now she's Ironheart with all these hearts. Is it just me?
I actually had this conversation. So I'm writing a two-part Ironheart thing with Danny, actually, who's my Bond co-writer. And we actually went back and forth a little bit about this in private. And I actually don't mind that they gave her own name, because I don't think that she needs to be Iron Man. I think she needs to be herself. I think that if your beef is with the heart part, then that's a different conversation. But I think that she deserves to have her own identity, even if she has a suit. War Machine has his own suit. That's his name. She can have her own suit. But I actually really like the hearts. I think that one of the things that media tends to do, especially to Black girls, especially to darker skinned Black girls, is just portray them as one thing. And it's always like very hard edged, sassy, you know, like you're the mean friend, you're the this. And it's like, no, I mean, you can be very strong and also like pink. Like you can be very strong and be like, I feel cute today. I'm going to put a heart. You know, I'm like, whatever. Like, sometimes I put ribbons in my hair, too. I'm not particularly, like, girly. But, you know, sometimes, like, you're feeling yourself. And I feel like if we want to be truthful in representation, we have to allow for those complexities, right? Does that mean every girl character should have that? Absolutely not. I don't even think every Black girl character should have that. But we do have Moon Girl, who is not about that. She's like, no, I have a dinosaur and he's big and scary and that's how I roll. And like, I do what I do. But I think that there's nothing wrong with portraying a strong Black girl who is incredibly intelligent. Also being like, I like hearts. I like, you know, I like purple and I like pink and I like.
I'm with the duality. It just seemed like a left turn, like, because I hadn't seen the hearts and I hadn't seen the pink and I had seen so much of the other stuff out of Riri. And then all of a sudden it seemed like such a turn that I was like, are they trying to make Riri more digestible? And I think that was the part that,
No. And you know, so I had the pleasure of meeting finally in person Eve Ewing, who wrote the Ironheart series. And you know, like hearing her talk about Riri, that's not it at all. She was very clear in that she was like, this is a person who has gone through a lot of stuff and she is strong and she is all these things, but also she is allowed to have these softer parts of herself. And because it is a superhero comic book, she's going to wear it on her chest. She's literally going to wear her heart, not on her sleeve, but on her chest. And I was like, that's great. because at the end of the day, she still has an Iron Man suit and she still will punch you in the face. Honestly, I'd rather get punched by the person with the heart. I feel like she might let me live. I don't know.
Invoke some more empathy. Okay, we got another question over here. I've got about 5 more minutes.
So what advice do you have for aspiring writers to get published in any format?
I think similar to advice for the artists, I think that you don't have to narrow down formats you write in, but I think that you're going to have to decide to finish a project at a time. Like, multiple things, but if you're trying to get published, you have to go, all right, am I trying to get a short story published? Am I trying to write a whole novel or a screenplay or whatever? And really put your energy behind it. I think that the thing that, for me personally, was really advantageous is that I had a lot of writing. So when people were asking me what I wanted to do, I could hand it to them. And even though my initial stuff didn't get published, they knew, they were like, oh, this is what they want to do. Okay, cool. So my advice to you is write as often as you can. You don't have to write every single day. A lot of people say you do. That's really stressful, and being stressed doesn't make you want to write more. But I would say that you should at least be thinking about the projects that you want to work on every day. I would say this is more nitty gritty, but I have found that outlining is really important no matter what you're doing, short story, novel, comic book, screenplay. Outline the heck out of it so that you know where you're going. It will change as you write. That's true. Always leave room for change. But like having a map is really important to finishing getting to the destination. And then once you have that, and I'm happy to talk about portfolio stuff at another time, but start building up your portfolio, start writing the kinds of things that you want to write. And then when you're ready, there are multiple places where you can submit your writing. There are pitch contests for comics. There are short story anthologies that are both digital and physical that you can submit stories to. Some of them will have prompts too. If you're in terms of novels, we can talk about query letters for an agent or how to talk to an editor at a publisher. That's all the later stuff. But I think the most important is you got to finish stuff. You have to do, even when it's painful, you got to do it. And I have found that outlining is a really good way to do that. Because I tend to get lost if I don't. Just like in a conversation, I meander all over the place. So
that's super dope. Bell's gonna ring in just a couple minutes, so quickly.
So for me, it's like, how hard was it to break into the world of like comics, which was before was a mostly like a man-made world. How hard was it to break into it?
It was really difficult. I got really lucky, and this is the secret as to how comics work in general. I made a lot of friends that were trying to make comics, like were at my level or were right above my level, were like making comics and starting to break in. And through making friends, they knew that I wanted to do this stuff. And so if they were ever asked for recommendations, sometimes they would put my name in. It was incredibly difficult even with that. I've been trying to write comics professionally since 2013. It is 2020. Last year was a great year. The year before was my break-in year. So 2018 is when I finally broke in, and then hopefully I continue to be able to do it. I think that the most important thing is finishing work. So you have things to show people, but also networking, but not in the way that they talk about in business class. Networking in like, hey, you guys are all doing what I want to be doing. Let's help each other, because comics is really small. And so we know as creators, not the publishing side, although they're great too, but as creators, we have to help each other because we can't make it on our own. And anyone who's out there saying that they just made it on their own, they're lying. It was really difficult. I continue sometimes to struggle, but my strength and my luck come from the fact that I was able to make friends. I went to conventions. I worked at a comic book shop, which is also a good way to do it. And this is something that I can definitely, if you need me to come back and talk more about it, I know we wasted so much time in the beginning, but we'll happily come back and talk about it.
I will have you every time you'd be down to join us, because we're going to have two lightning, really quick bite-sized questions, but really quick, in case we get interrupted by the bell, can everybody congratulate Vita on X-Men? Congratulations. We are super excited to have you representing us in the comic books. That's honestly how I feel. And I'm an old dude, like, and I know that you're writing for this like younger generation, so I can't even imagine how that feels. Bite-sized question, go.
I noticed that you have tattoos, and I'm really interested. So which one of your tattoos was your very first one?
My very first one was this one right here. It's upside down in the picture. And it is from a manga that I really love. It's from Flame of Recca, because I am a huge weeb.
I do not know Flame of Recca.
Like, that's awesome.
One of my favorites.
You got manga heads. Go for it.
Do comic books, can you combine like your love from comic books towards anything to like entrepreneurship and business?
Yeah, absolutely. I know people who have made comic publishing companies like small imprints, and they now are able to sell the company for $1 million. I know people who are artists who do prints and commissions, and they're able to sell those and make money doing that stuff. I know people who make their own comic books and just produce them themselves and make money that way. There's a million ways you can do it. There's also, if you are interested in art directing and editing, all that stuff is part of the business. And knowing the business parts helps in making the comics as well. So absolutely.
Do you have any shout outs? Anything that we should check out? Any shout outs before you go? It will get loud in here now.
No, you're good. I don't know. I just read as much as you can. Go to the library and request comics through that, because it is free to you. And I know y'all don't got money. And also, we get paid because the library buys the books. So anything that you're interested in reading, do that. I can also email and give a list of recommendations, and I can tailor make recommendations.
When does Children of the Atom come out?
That comes out in April. So.
All right. April, X-Men Children of the Atom. I'm going to make sure that you all have it. Steampunks at Highlander, please say peace out.
Peace out.
Thank you very much, Vita. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.